Is any submitters who are scheduled for after afternoon tea coming early? Yep, come on up. Which submitter are you?
I'm Matthew Taylor.
Yeah, good afternoon, welcome. So, g'day. Not sure how long you've been sitting there. We've read the original submission. I say this to every submitter, so you don't need to reread out the original submission to us. So, but thanks very much for putting that in. We have read that. But you're very welcome to speak to the key points that you'd like to take us to take on board, and then we'll see if we have questions for you.
Right. I was going to speak. You obviously read it, so I wasn't really going to speak to the submission. More.
That's right.
Talk about what we've done at home and kind of why, what we're doing and why.
Yep.
Because I think we're in Violent South, and there's probably, we've kind of changing our way of farming or my leadership approach a little bit into kind of like a, I think they call it disruptive leadership. So what Environment South is trying to do is change the status quo, which is, I think Environment South has done very good. They've messaged very well what the problem is with the science, and this plan's very much about the how we're going to fix it. I think the problem is they haven't addressed the why and conveyed that very well to the community. And if you put the why before everything else, then you get everyone's values aligning a lot better, and everyone buys into a shared vision, and then the how doesn't become as important, because everyone's, so that's kind of where we're at as a family. So I'm a third generation at home, we're 5,600 hectares, a lot of it's pastoral lease, so a lot of what Environment South is bringing in we deal with via Lins, who then have to consult Department of Conservation, so any consent we get for vegetation clearance or cultivation, we'll have DOC come on, and then Lins will issue a consent. And that process, up to date, we prepare those consents ourselves, and then if there's something that we don't like, then there's the opportunity to go to a rehearing and we can submit more information there. So the onus is on us to do it. We don't have to go to a consultant, and I think that gets us to buy into the process a bit more. So whether something like that could happen with farm environment plans, so a lot of what you're proposing, to a point we're slightly late adopters at home, but we've been involved in that kind of process over the last 10-15 years with the development program with cows and cultivation and wood country, and there's things we've done which we wouldn't do again that we know didn't have a very good outcome. We've learned from that and put different processes in place. It's just my concern is that there's enough flexibility allowed in the water and land plan to allow some of those innovative solutions to happen, which they could be completely left field, that you're really not expecting to solve a problem. So, so I'm third generation. I was lucky enough that my granddad got a start on the Homer Tunnel and got a rehab farm for the war, and then he bought where we are quite, you know, fortuitously before airplanes and stuff like that made high country places economically viable. So that's kind of, you know, he's left a legacy there, and then Dad's his continued development. And so historically we've probably put more importance on the economic aspect of what we've done, and I think in the last 10-15 years we're slowly recognising that we need to invest a bit more into the social capital of the community and what we're doing on farm and the environmental side of it too. So where I'm getting to is that it's quite a slow process. There's some very entrenched views there, and like farm succession has done a lot for us, but I've still got to take my parents along with us.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of where it involves South and in a different context, but that's the same problem. So, yeah, as I say, like, we've kind of, Dad, he did, you know, change was a given, but I think the pace of change is, and it's a lot quicker nowadays, so we've kind of embraced that, and like I said, probably for our business, our farm at home, a lot of what we're doing now is for my kids and the next kids, and to do that we've got to build our asset base economically, but we've also got that social aspect and increasing its environmental aspect too. So probably the three drivers for us at home have been farm succession, which you can look at, you know, that's a problem, but that's kind of the problem there, but we've got, once you get people buying into the why, then the solutions become quite easy. And then the other one has probably been climate change. Like, I've probably been sceptical, but I've come around that it is happening. We were just reverting to long-term averages at home. The solutions for us have been coming up to about 300 hectares of lucerne now, and we're wanting to get to 700 odd hectares, and this year we've dabbled in a little bit of irrigation, but that's kind of the how. The why we're doing all that is that's going to give us access to different markets and building our resilience, and you know, it's not, you know, personally, if you feel you've got nothing you can control, whereas now climate doesn't really worry, we can roll with the punches. And probably the other one is why I'm here is the environmental expectations. So we've got 15k of road frontage on a tourist highway. So the stuff that we just can't do because we need a social license to operate. And I've been saying to all my neighbours, like, luckily, Dad, 15 years ago, we were probably the first ones to come to cows north of Five Rivers. At one stage, we were up to 2,500-3,000 dairy cows. And a lot of what we've done in the last 5 years has been orientated around, because 8-9 years ago, I got talking to Environment South and People, a pretty good steer that long term, that wasn't a very good business model for us to be in. So it's taken us 5 or 6 years to change our business around, because I've been saying that to my neighbours for the last 7 or 8 years, that wintering cows wasn't long term option, and they think you're mad, but it's taken that long for us. So that winter crop has enabled us to go to a different business model. So I'm just trying to stress that it takes time for farmers to change and to react, and some of the signals we're getting now, 2 or 3 years, it's some of the very complex systems of change. We could have seen that as being a big problem, wintering cows coming out of the system and all the rest of it, whereas it's actually allowed us to get into higher value crops, and we're leaching, putting all the lucerne in, we're going to be leaching less nitrogen and air and farm. I mean, seeing we're getting more off a smaller area, it's the rest of the farm, the Tussock Flat and the Hill Country is, you know, we're building, yeah. So it's a whole system approach is where I'm getting to. So yes, it was a challenge, and that was kind of the what. But that's, yeah. So, what else? A little bit disjointed. So I was probably a bit negative in my original submission about what Environment South and sponsoring and plan, and probably the intervening, 3 or 4 months, reflecting on it. A lot of, yeah, I'm not, yeah, it's a slow process changing. So I'm not, like, we've done a lot of Hill Country development, and just the stuff that we've done on the hill cultivation wise that we don't do anymore. I think we've always left big buffers, but we've done some very steep stuff, and in hindsight, now if we can't get a bulky over it, I think it's pretty marginal, which is around about a 15 degree slope. We've done stuff up to 20, 25 degrees. You get a bit of a buzz once you've done it, and you look back, but then long term, I don't question economically a little bit. We've never done any spray and pray, just I don't think that would be acceptable in our location. And there's other factors that I kind of question it a little bit. There's different ways of... We're still putting chemical out of a plane, we're just not stripping all the vegetation out to get to the end goal. Our end goal is we want a 30 to 40% legume dominant pasture. And hopefully, if we can get there without going through a full spray and pray or cultivation process. What else about the hill, the sloping developments? We always used to double crop out there, full cultivation, so full disking first year and then another crop. And some of that clay terrace soil, that second year crop of kale and sticking, well, it was only the R1 calves out there, bring a lot of clay up, destroying a soil structure and a lot of sediment going off. So now what we do now is the first year crop streak drill, you maintain a little bit of a mat there, you catch the soil doesn't get worked up quite so much with hoggets. That second, instead of putting a second crop through, we put summer turnips through, graze lambs out there through the summer, and then we drill another crop of grass in the autumn, and then it gets grassed out the following year. So there's different ways of skin a cat, is what I'm getting to. What else? The fencing of the waterways, I'd like to think that could maybe be tied into having, instead of having slopes, relating to slope, whether we could relate it back to the physiological zones, perhaps in the hill country zone. And whether some of that was captured in the farm environmental plans, because instead of just necessarily going to fencing, if we could come up with different, it might be a case of we put a wetland at the bottom of a creek as a sediment trap. Or if fencing isn't a viable alternative on that hill country, like some of that country at home, we're going to make more of a mess putting a fence line in than what the problem that we're actually trying to solve. And then we've got a little bit of river frontage at home, so probably 7 or 8 years ago I was chipped a little bit by a few fishermen about hoggets getting access to the creek. So I thought, right, we'll fence it off. So we put a single wire fence up because we couldn't, that's all, it floods. So then I think that summer I had a conversation with Kevin Marshall from, he looks after the river from here, so he said, what the hell can I do that for? I'm going to spend twice my budget on removing willows and spraying gorse now. And I said, oh yeah, okay then. So that he was right, that has played out. And then probably 3 or 4 years later, I was tripped by a couple of fishermen for fencing it off because now they've
can't get through.
There's a 10,000 volt electric fence beside it, and there's Cotswold up to your knees. And I think the bit that I've observed on there is that you've got clumpy Cotswold growing on the riverbank, and whenever we get a flood, all the sediment gets captured there, and the bank is very slowly degrading. And as it degrades, it loses a bit of stability and it carves in, and then we're getting sediment in the creek. So I don't think it's helpful to get fixated on one solution to a problem. And then probably as a byproduct of putting a single wire fence up there, now we don't run hoggets by the creek anymore, we run cattle reasonably intensively. So looking at the whole farm system, perhaps we were having less of an impact on the river before by running hoggets than fencing it off and now running cattle adjacent to the river. A very difficult public perception. What else did I have? The whole, I think it was 50 hectare winter grazing, intensive winter grazing. So we're wanting to get to is putting a lot of lucerne in and different farm systems. So that kind of necessitates a double crop or winter crop to get there. So that's kind of why we've still got cows in the system. We're probably around about 2 to 250 hectares of winter crop. And I kind of question that because that 250 hectares of crop is spread over 1,500 hectares of cultivated plus other tussock flats. Mm. And then I'm not having a go at my neighbour, but so he's got an 80 hectare block that's right adjacent to the Matara River. He could put 50 hectares of crop in there, and that's on riverine soil. So I just don't think it's approach actually going to solve the problem he's trying to address. And then the farm environment plans, to a point we've kind of, I'm guilty of having all that stuff in my head, so as long as that's a environment Southland's willing to accept that it's a living document that's going to evolve over time, and if they were to come and audit it, it might not be up to scratch, but as long as there's some guidance through there, if it was pretty blatant that environmental plan wasn't up to date, or there was something being breached, and I think recourse to a rehearing or a forcing you to go into a discretionary consent, I think that'd be a pretty fair way of dealing with that. I think it's just one of those things we're just going to have to suck it up. That's where things are. But rather than seeing that as a problem, I think markets and processes are going to demand that type of thing anyway, so it's not black and white. There's a grey area there. We're going to get benefit out of it. I'm trying to stay reasonably positive, I think. And I don't know, well, we've kind of really had a change in mindset at home that the legume is what drives our whole system. Overseer has got measurement issues around legumes and lucerne, so I know that's not in this phase of the plan, that's probably the next phase, but just as long as Environment South is mindful that there are limitations to overseer, and if every farm in Southland has to get an overseer plan done, there's just not the capacity there in the industry to get those plans done in the time frame by 2022 or 2020. We've done an overseer plan at home, and it's a bit of a nonsense because we can offset it with 2,000 hectares of alpine and hill country that gets known in. So if we were to live to an overseer model doing 25, 30 kilograms of nitrogen, we could want to crop 1,500 hectares of ground. So that's very complicated. To stick something in a plan, it's not going to be very easy. What else was I going to say? On the nitrate issue, the sediment in the E. coli, I think there's on our hill country. I don't want to give a false impression. Like, we're quite late starters, and we're quite only just getting into riparian planting now, and we've got wetlands at home that we're getting fenced off now. That we would have done with that Environment South and prompting us, I think we can see that's mine and Shona's legacy to our kids. We want to give something back. So I'm not going to, good management practices, yes, we observe it, but we've got staff, and the only way we can get staff to observe, I can't keep an eye on them day in, day out. So that's getting them to buy into the why of why we're doing it, and not just going and telling them this is what we're doing, which some help from Environment South would be really good. And I kind of wonder with the why, if I look at groups like the Pomahaka group and what's happened at Waituna, where it's been reasonably farmer-led through, say, sub-catchment groups, that the next stage where Environment South is heading, if they could resource or help facilitate that a little bit, which then that becomes farmer-led a little bit and a bit more buy-in, rather than, it's all very you telling us what we need to do, but which then that kind of, I think that's going to help sell the story a little bit more too. So I don't know whether that's ever come up, but I know there's probably a little bit the public could look at if Environment South and resource their land sustainability officers, which do a very good job, better to help farmers compile FEPs, that's an indirect subsidy. But I think you've got to remember that there's differential rates and farmers are rated on land value. So we are, to get my value out of my $25,000 worth of rates, that's where my value is coming from. So I'd really like those guys to be well resourced and work alongside farmers, instead of us having to tick go along to a consultant to tick a box and get a resource consent. Well, I think it's beneficial for the council for our guys to work with us too, because there's solutions that will come out. That, yeah, and they get a better understanding of what we're doing too. So, yeah. And the legume thing, that's kind of our way of dealing with the whole nitrate problem. I probably should comment more on the irrigation side of it, but that's all I... It's when the plan was submitted, we were only just getting into it, so I didn't. But, so we've gone down the Lucerne route, that's how we've solved our nitrogen problem, and now we put a pivot on. From a production point of view, it'd be really nice to grow rye grass under it, but the 600 units at the end that we'd have to put on to grow at 22 ton on our soils, I don't think is going to cut it. So, given our experience with Lucerne, what we're trying to do at the moment is, if we could grow Lucerne under the pivot, we're not putting on any, you know, that solves our nitrogen problem, and we're still going to grow 22 ton. It's just trying to get the farm system to utilise that 22 ton profitable way, and I hope that the nitrogen out of that Lucerne is going to be within the root zone. So that, other than that, that's, I think that was about all I had. Thanks, Ryan.
That's been pretty comprehensive and wide ranging, which is good. We'll see if we have any questions for you, Lord.
No, I think you've covered the topics well, and you've clearly stated let's understand the why. So on that basis, I have no questions.
And just one, which is a bit general really, but we've had some submitters expressing a bit of concern about having to get something consented that's not a permitted activity. And you initially said that you've operated under consents for some of your development. Would you have any comment about the consenting process?
Yeah, I think the consents, when I said with Lynn's, those discretionary consents, I think they would be more akin to a farm environmental plan that gets audited and your land sustainability officers having input when that... So the Lynn's consent under a pastoral lease, it's nowhere near as prescribed as what resource consent. So I think that model, it's not as restrictive, and you're working alongside. So I think I'm reluctant about resource consents. I've been through that with irrigation, and you tick a box, and it's a $2,500 annual charge, and you get very little feedback from the council, and it's something that's shoved in the bottom drawer, and you never look at it again. Whereas, yeah, I think those farm environmental plans done right could have a lot of value.
Okay, thank you for that.
Yeah. No questions for me, thanks.
No, well, I did have some, but you've explained it all very well, and it's been very comprehensive, so thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I've no further questions either, but thanks very much for coming in and giving us a detailed description of what's happening on your farm and your views on those matters. It's been helpful.
Yep. Well, thank you for that. I actually missed my slot earlier last month, so thank you for the opportunity.
No, you're right, you're fine. You're right.